Morning, everyone. Our scripture reading today is going to be Mark chapter 16, verses 1 through 8. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is a place they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he's going ahead of you to Galilee. So there you will see him, just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. And all that had been commanded them, they told briefly to those around, to Peter. And afterward, Jesus himself sent out through them from east to west the sacred and imperishable proclamation of eternal salvation.
Christ is risen. I have to say that one of the best and weirdest things about growing up as a pastor's kid is being used as a sermon illustration. One Easter, when I was in late elementary school, I got to be a stand-in for Jesus's body. Yeah. Six or more grown men in the church wrapped me up in a sheet and carried me from the back of the church sanctuary up the front and placed me inside a large papier-mâché tomb that had been placed on the front, strategically placed over the exit door from the front platform. So as my dad started preaching, I quietly wriggled out of this sheet and exited through the hidden exit door, and, you know, joined the congregation in the back. And so then when my dad was done preaching, he went into the papier-mâché tomb and brought out the empty sheet and used it as a sermon illustration for what had happened that first Easter. Looking back at it now, this was very theatrical for a small evangelical Quaker church in rural Ohio. This was not our normal way of doing things. This morning, the traditional gospel reading is out of the Gospel of John, while this passage that we read in Mark is an alternative choice. John is the theatrical version of the resurrection story. You get a lot more characters, there's a dramatic foot race, and Jesus actually shows up in the flesh to Mary as she sits weeping in the garden. Sensationally, she then goes and tells the disciples what has happened, what she has seen, that the risen Lord is there among them. In Mark, we get none of that. The women come to the tomb. There's a very surprising lack of a dead body and a very helpful angel. But Jesus is nowhere to be found. He has gone ahead of them to Galilee. There they are supposed to meet him. The women, though, are seized by terror and amazement, and so say nothing because they are afraid. And there, the Gospel of Mark ends. The oldest copies we have of this text just stop there. Later on, epilogues and conclusions and further explanations were added, and we get some of the stories recorded in the other Gospel accounts. The women reporting Jesus' resurrection, Jesus appearing to the 11, Jesus on the road to Emmaus, and finally, Christ's ascension. I want to pause here because it would be easy at this point to sort of get tangled up in the question of, you know, who's right? Like, where do the details lie? Who's more journalistically or historically accurate about the account of the resurrection? Is it John? Is it Mark? Or is it one of the others? Or maybe this question makes us uncomfortable, and we can try to squish all the accounts together and fit them into one piece and say they're not that different. And as tempting as either of these options are, I'm not going to try to take either of them today. I'm not going to try to answer these questions. That can be a different sermon for a different day because they are good questions. But for me, after spending a lot of time trying to make the Bible fit my own expectations, I've come to a place, at least most days, of trying to simultaneously embrace it and wrestle with it. And the resurrection in Mark is worth embracing and wrestling with, because the Christian story is worth embracing and wrestling with. Even more than that, Jesus and all that he is and all that he does is worth wrestling with and worth embracing. Even when the truth leaves us amazed and terrified and afraid, uncertain what to do. And Mark, with his sudden cliffhanger ending, gives us space to grapple with what might come next. So today, let's hear the story. Once upon a time, God created the world and everything in it. It was good. But humanity, tasked with taking care of things together with their creator, decided they would rather do it on their own terms and messed it up. This began a long pattern of God reaching out again and again to human beings, longing for fellowship and reconciliation, to renew that partnership we had had in the beginning. But people continued to decide that we would go it alone. We could go it alone. This resulted in a world full of exploitation, violence, and pain. And so our loving God decided to come closer than God ever had before. God was born into a world in a backwater town to a no-name family in a conquered land. Jesus, God in flesh, said wonderful things and did amazing things. He healed people and fed them. He taught them God's love and forgiveness. He spent time with the poor, the outcast, the sinners, and the forgotten. But because his life and message threatened the established religious and political order, he was killed and his followers scattered. This is where we pick up the story in Mark today. Jesus is dead. All the hopes and dreams his disciples had are laying scattered in pieces around them, shattered on the floor. The male disciples are mostly off hiding somewhere, but some of the women have followed Jesus through his trial, torture, and crucifixion. Did no one notice their presence because they were women? Were they protected by their marginal status? Or were they just braver than Peter, James, and John? Whatever the reason for their presence, when another follower of Jesus laid their teacher's body in the grave, the women, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome, knew where it was. And so after the required Sabbath rest, they came to the tomb to prepare the corpse with oils and spices, to say a final goodbye to their rabbi and friend. But, this is a very big, I wanted to say a big but then I have small children at home, and so I like big but this is a very consequential but. This is a but on which the universe turns. But when they got there, nothing was as they expected. The large stone covering the tomb was already rolled away. The grave was empty except for a glowing young man saying, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you. Spoiler, the women did none of these things. The Marys and Salome were very much alarmed. And who wouldn't be? A person beaten to a bloody pulp and brutally executed by the state 3 days ago had come back to life. What in the world is happening? The women didn't go and tell the rest of the disciples, at least not right away. Now, obviously, the women eventually told someone for this to be recorded, but they, at first, were not filled with Easter hope or joy, just confusion, fear, and trepidation. In the Gospel of Mark, we end with them in this state, uncertain what to do next. We are left to imagine ourselves, the Marys and Salome, as they gather enough courage to tell the other Jesus followers what they've experienced. Miraculously, as the truth opens itself to them, the oppressive fear is transformed into the evangelical fervor that we witness in the early church at Pentecost and beyond. It's good to remember that Mark's first readers were living very close to this reality. They knew that the bearers of the good news had not stayed afraid and silent. They knew that the disciples had eventually caught up with Jesus and seen for themselves the wonder of the bodily resurrection. They knew the fullness of truth. They were not that far removed from it. On that first Easter, the angel tells the women that Jesus has gone ahead of them to Galilee and will meet them there. This doesn't surprise me at all. Jesus in the Gospel of Mark is always on the move. Things are happening immediately and right away and next. Jesus doesn't even stick around at the tomb to say hi. He's on his way and he's looking for the disciples to catch up. But why Galilee? Why did Jesus return to his home region after his resurrection? There were other options. He could have appeared to the crowds in Jerusalem who were ready to crown him a king. He could have made the crucifying Romans quake in their boots. He could have proved his righteousness to the religious leaders, exacted revenge, consolidated power. Instead, Jesus returns to the nowhere place that he started and invites the disciples to find him there. The story continues away from the center of earthly power. The new chapter is Jesus cooking breakfast for his disciples by the lake. The plot twist is him meeting them on the road. The surprising sequel of him breaking bread with them like he did that last night. They're getting back to the basics of where they began. The kingdom has come and it looks much more mundane and much more familiar than anyone expected it to be, despite a resurrected body. And despite evil's best attempts, the resurrection of Jesus means the continuation of God's great rescue plan for humanity. Where we expect a period, a full stop, God has placed only a pause. Our human pride and self-centeredness always seems to get the final word, mocking the assertion that for God so loved the world. But our death-creating propensity to sin is not the final word. Jesus is alive and is out of the tomb, running towards a new day of God's presence among us, inviting us to join him. It was this living presence that the early church experienced, It was this living presence that early Quakers testified to. It is this living presence that is here today. But I must confess that in my pessimistic moments, I see very little in the word in the world that seems to support the assertion that life triumphs over death, that love is stronger than hate, or even that people can be transformed. But the miracle of the risen Lord declares the good news that God is not only with us, but God is for us. That we serve a God who is powerful enough to come and turn the tide. That in a very real and embodied way, God's kingdom has come in the person of the resurrected Jesus and in our own lives and in our own community. The reality of Easter is a bulwark against the despair that can easily overcome us in the face of war, starvation, and injustice. The resurrected Jesus goes on ahead of us and calls for us to follow him out and into those places full of need, hopelessness, and oppression. Because the slaughtered lamb is triumphant over all that kills and destroys. And so believing this, we feed our neighbor. We build peace. We hope in a coming day when all we do will result in a world that is more like God's dream for it. And we need not despair. Instead, trusting in the power and goodness of God, we practice. We practice so that we can believe it. This is a lens change, a culture shift, a leap of faith. The first disciples obviously needed some time to figure out, having even seen the empty tomb. They're not sure what to do with it, what it means. But for us, community can help. Waiting together to hear the living Christ speak in our hearts can help. Learning to recognize where the Spirit is moving in the world. Figuring out what our part is to play in this work. These are all good things, but I would caution us, caution myself, against the striving of shoulds. We do not have to make anything happen. That is the good news of Easter. Rather, we are looking to recognize the reality of what already is. Christ is risen. Christ is risen. Good job. Anything that reveals that reality to us, anything that aligns our vision and our lives more radically with that truth, is full of resurrection power. It is worth centering those vital practices, ideals, relationships, and stories so that we might see more clearly where Jesus has gone. It is where he is that we will experience God's power. Conversely, anything that feeds the lie that all is lost, that we are alone, or that we must earn our place, is best left dead and buried. Jesus has gone ahead of us to continue God's work. We're invited into the resurrection life that he is already living. Whether you, like I, have literally gotten to shimmy out of some grave clothes and disappear out of a tomb or not, the new life that Christ is experiencing is ours too. We can leave behind the stink of death and follow him as those first disciples did, eating together, healing, transforming, preaching, loving, lives transformed by the power of the resurrection. Are you ready? Christ is risen.
He is risen.
Amen.